Hi, my name is Trish McDonald, and my favorite thing is curiosity about longevity.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. It is Sunday, October 11th. Nope. It is Sunday, October 10th. October 11th has been looming big in my mind as it is tomorrow. It's also the day of my breast reduction, which is because in this breast cancer journey, I don't have the BRCA gene. So a mastectomy was not a recommended part of my treatment. However, radiation is easier when your boobs are less like Ziploc bags of Jell-O. So I am doing a reduction and a lift. It's elective, but it's going to improve my outcomes. And it's also really hard to do any reconstruction post radiation. So that is what's happening this week. I'm recording this as my mom is driving across Chicago. She had to take a creative route today because it is also the Chicago Marathon, and I didn't want her getting caught in marathon redirected traffic. So she'll be here soon. I am still waiting on the delivery of my medical recliner. So that's supposed to be here at 7 o'clock tonight. That's kind of the last piece of infrastructure I need to recover from this surgery that I'm currently aware of. This week I met with both of my oncologists. I'm healing well from the lumpectomy. The margins were good. It didn't spread to my lymph node. And then I met with my medical oncologist, who is in charge of chemo, and she explained why, even though it's all been removed, it is a cancer that still requires chemo. And she explained that the science of a stage one, grade one breast cancer, that they've really decreased the amount of chemotherapy you need. So right now the plan is I'll only be on Taxol, which is a fairly easy chemotherapy. I use that lightly. It causes hair loss, but it's not, and it may cause neuropathy, but it seems like it's not as brutal as some of the other chemotherapy treatments that folks get. That will start the very beginning of November. I've gotten permission to attend some live comedy events that I bought tickets for, as long as I'm masked and being very precautious. I was like, can I go home for Christmas? Can I attend these events? What are the rules of isolation? How does COVID impact chemotherapy this year? And it's not the wild west of COVID when it comes to chemotherapy anymore. So I don't have to be quite as isolated as I once thought I would be. Ezra will still be hosting my Hanukkah party instead of me, with some help from some of my girlfriends. But I'm feeling as prepared as possible. Really grateful for coworkers who have been incredibly understanding and supportive while I've been getting ready for this treatment seemingly forever. It took 3 months from diagnosis to first surgery. There's a world in which I thought I would be like wrapping up. I would be like all done with radiation and everything by now. I was like, oh, by late. There was a point where I thought by like Rosh Hashanah, I would be done with all my treatments. When the truth is, once things start on November 5th, I'll be in treatment for the following year of infusions and then 5 years of estrogen treatment, hormone treatment. So that looms large for me, and but I'm feeling pretty, I was just so ready to get it started. So with that said, this week I'm talking to Trish McDonald. Trish lives in Florida. She is 77 years young and has published her first novel. I really love that the two book publicists I've been working with lately have introduced me to some writers publishing their first novels over 50. At the age of over 50, because so often we only think about the ingenue who publishes in their 20s, and there's still so much time for all of us to pick up our pens and start writing. And Trish is a delight to talk to. We talk about tiny homes, RV parks, gut health, and her book, of course, Paper Bags, which came out on Tuesday and is available in digital and print. Wear a mask, wash your hands, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and we get recommendations without using an algorithm. Our fall of talking with authors continues, and today I am joined by Trish McDonald. Her novel, Paper Bags, just came out on Tuesday, October 5th, which was a big day for Finding Favorite guests. We've had a number of the novels came out on Tuesday. And Trish is an author. She lives in an RV park in Florida. And we're going to talk about that because as soon as she told me, I had questions and I said, save it for the pod. Trish, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here. And we should hope we'll have fun.
Oh, I think we will. Yeah. So you said people will be interested that I live in an RV park. And during COVID, people really took to the open road and RV life. And how long have you been living an RV life?
I've been living an RV life since 1996.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's probably only the past maybe... got to think about this. We kind of settled down in 2012 and we bought one of the tiny houses.
Okay.
And has to be less than 500 square feet.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's what we have.
Wow.
It seems after you've been living in an RV for a long time, it seems so spacious. You can't even imagine.
I imagine, I don't even know if I've ever been inside an RV, maybe once at like a trade show, but I do love watching the videos. And it seems like in an RV, everything is convertible, right? It's a couch, it's a table, it's a bed.
Right.
Are things in the tiny house, do they have more singular functions or are they also like transformers?
No, it's more like just a regular house. However, our ceilings in the living room are 13 and a half foot high.
Oh.
So, and beautiful windows all around. So it's really quite gorgeous. So that's where the feeling of spaciousness comes from.
Right.
And then when you're in an RV park, you live outside.
Right.
That's the whole idea. And so, you know, your neighbors and everybody's a neighbor.
Yeah.
And there's always something going on. Always.
Oh, I can only imagine. And did you keep the RV when you bought the tiny house so you could still go on adventures or
We did.
Yeah.
We did. We just sold it. Probably maybe about 3 months ago.
Okay.
And we're going to buy a lot and we're going to put another tiny house on a lot that we own.
Okay.
So we're not part of the, who knows how much this is going to cost us next year kind of thing. Yes.
Right.
Right.
I imagine like all housing markets, it has been deeply impacted by COVID and by lumber prices and just all it's such a weird market right now. Things are getting priced out so fast.
Right. And I think even just trying to find an RV has been very difficult. So
there's no inventory.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I have some friends who bought a camper van. And like they were on a waiting list at a dealer in Colorado, and the dealer called and said, hey, we ordered this camper van. The family decided not to buy it. And so you should come down today and look at it, and it will definitely be sold within the next 48 hours. So we're calling to give you an FYI, and it's all about who gets here first and who can close on the financing, because it was the one camper van that was going to be in stock for months.
I've heard a lot of stories like that.
Yeah.
Waiting 2 years for a camper. That's insane.
Yeah. So you've said our, so there's, is it two of you or more?
No, just two of us.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
What are things about living either in a tiny home or in an RV that would be surprising to those of us who live in bigger, less mobile homes?
I think probably how little you really need.
Mm-hmm.
When we decide to buy something, something has to go.
Mm-hmm.
You can't bring something in without getting rid of whatever it's going to take the place of. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
It takes away all that impulse buying. No, you can't do that.
Right.
But everything else is, I mean, everything is full size. The only thing that isn't full size is our dishwasher. It's 18 inches wide, but
oh, okay.
It's pretty small, but it does what it needs to do.
Right. And if you stay on top of the dishes and you're doing them daily or every couple of days, then you, and the 18 inch dishwasher can work just fine for two people.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. I think people are surprised that they could do with so little space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes cleaning a snap.
Oh, I bet. I bet. Is your tiny home, so it's on rental land right now, or it's a...
Correct. Correct.
Are you in a space that's like a combination of tiny homes and RVs, or are you kind of in a... Okay.
Yes. Combination. Right.
So some neighbors are there more year round and others come and go.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You get up in the morning and you look over and somebody new could be. Somebody could have pulled in overnight. It's amazing.
Yeah. And is it, I'm just letting my ignorant flag fly. I have some, but what about, I know that not all of Florida gets the same hurricane risk, but how do you deal with hurricanes or tropical storms? Are you far enough away from the coast that doesn't matter? Or would you, when you were in your RV, would you drive north? Like, how do you deal with those storms?
Right. We would leave. When we had a direct hit from Irma.
Okay.
4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we were north.
Okay.
We were not here.
Yeah.
People lost roofs and lanais, and our steps ended in the lake.
Oh gosh.
But we didn't have any problems, but our unit is fairly new.
Okay.
Some of the units are older, mm-hmm. and they might not be quite as hurricane proof.
Yeah.
But the insurance is expensive. It's very expensive.
I bet.
And then of course they have the little clause with, you're covered, except in the case of a hurricane.
Right. Which is the main problem, right?
Exactly.
Great. Well, thank you for answering many of my questions about what that's like.
It's a fun life.
When you were more mobile, did you like do all the national parks?
We did.
We
went out west, and we summers when we were a little bit younger, we did what they call work camping.
Okay.
And that's where you agree to go into a campground and help them out. I worked in the office. Jerry worked wherever they needed help, landscaping or plumbing or wherever they needed help. And it was pretty cool. We got, usually we got a free site and a stipend.
Mm-hmm.
And we went all over the country. We work camped in Cape Cod, nice, really beautiful wow. places. Bar Harbor, Maine, Maryland, down by the Eastern Shore. We went all over. It was great.
That's amazing. I have never heard of work camping. I've just like never heard of it before.
They have
it
a
makes
whole
sense.
They have a whole website. Every week I get. Even though we're not doing it anymore,
right?
I get the listing of 10, 15 places that are looking for people to come out and help.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Great fun.
That's so neat.
Yep.
Now, while you were doing all this traveling, you've got your novel coming out. Is this your first novel?
This is my first novel. I've written all my life, but most of the writing was educational.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been grant writing, newsletters. Always did some kind of writing. I've also written some little, I guess maybe like pamphlets, 35, 40 pagers
yeah.
on how to play pickleball or mm-hmm. teach yourself Mahjong or different kinds of things like that.
Yeah.
But I've never, ever attempted anything at this level.
Yeah. How did this book come about for you? When did you decide to switch from nonfiction to tackling a big idea like this?
Actually, it kind of just happened to me. I was, mm-hmm. I don't know how many others have told you about the contest, but what happened was I won a trip to mm-hmm. Vermont for a week.
Okay.
And the idea was I was going to hole up in a room in Vermont and I was going to write.
Yeah.
But that's all the plan was in my mind. So we're sitting around the dinner table and the CEO starts talking to everybody at the table and he goes around the table and says, "So what are you writing?" And someone says, "I'm writing an alternative history of the world."
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else says, "I'm writing about five friends who go on a trip to the Greek Isles."
Mm-hmm.
And he turns to me and I said, "Oh, I don't know. I'm probably going to write something about gut health and longevity." His head spins away from me so fast that I'm surprised that he didn't have like a whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
So then afterwards, they do something they call a mash.
Uh-huh.
So the idea is that y'all read what you had written that afternoon.
Right.
And I was last, of course, and I got up and I read something really raw,
mm-hmm.
very emotional. And he didn't say a word, not a word, and a long time didn't say a word. And I thought, he said, "You want to know what I think?" And I was like, "Nah, maybe not so much."
Right.
And then he said, "I thought you were here for the food." Took a big deep breath and realized, because I'm not a spring chicken. I
mm-hmm.
knew. I thought, "Oh wow, I knocked him out."
Yeah.
And then he said, "You are an effing great writer," and I almost dropped on the floor.
Wow.
So that was the challenge.
Yeah.
That was the challenge. And he said to me, I don't think you have enough time to do this, but if you do, it's going to be great." And then when I was leaving, he said, "Don't let me down." And of course, that was all I needed. Don't
yeah,
let me down.
Right.
Japers. And I'm competitive. I was
uh-huh.
up every morning. I was up every morning at 3:30. I'm a determined person. I have
mm-hmm.
a lot of perseverance. It's one of my Scott's
right.
You know, you can call it what you want, but it's something I have. So I did. I have no idea where it all came from. I must have been late 50s. I had been married for 34 years. I left my husband and I took off for the Florida Keys by myself, me and my dog.
Okay.
My yellow lab. And naive. I mean, I had no idea about anything. And I certainly didn't have any knowledge about gender fluidity or anything that had, I mean, I was completely innocent. Mm-hmm. And here I am in the Florida Keys. And when you go to the Florida Keys, you're running away.
Right.
I mean, that's a very remote place.
Right.
And so I wanted to go because I thought, well, that's where Hemingway did his writing.
Yeah.
So who else should I follow? Right. That's what got me there. And then the people kept me there. I mean, they were so interesting and their stories were so interesting. And I knew it was a real, real important story, but I didn't know if I had the courage to be able to write the story.
Mm-hmm.
All my life, I had been a perfectionist.
Mm-hmm.
It came from, you know, the shame-based family model.
Right.
You hear about it, and that was me.
Yeah.
So I took the shame and I made it perfection. And then here I am, you know, with all my rules and everything that's supposed to be this way and that way. And I meet this rambling guy who's just really fluid.
Mm-hmm.
So in the story, my character is very much like me.
Okay.
And what they say is, at least what they've told me, is that it's very common in a debut novel to have yourself in there. It's just very common. So I decided to write this story about a time in my life that was quite a ways in the past, but I knew it was something that a lot of people were experiencing, especially right now, as so many people are trying to figure it all out. Do I need to figure it out? Should I figure it out? What is my gender and how fluid can I be? All those kinds of questions. And so I had to, in the morning when I write, I do like a chant. I say, I am bold. I'm fearless. I'm courageous. I'm determined.
And I'm writing
from the standpoint of the cisgender woman who doesn't know how to figure it out.
Right.
Who's always done what's right. And she just doesn't know. She doesn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the story, you know, I'm sure you hear the story, and it could be the wife or it could be the husband comes home and says, honey, I'm thinking I might really have the heart of a woman. I might want to be a woman.
Yeah.
And so this is the other side.
Yeah.
This is the side of the person that has to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
How do you figure it out?
Right. It's the point of view of the partner who's not going to transition.
That's correct.
And how your identity might transition with theirs. You know, do you have a relationship do you have a relationship that keeps you together? Do you have one that says we're going to go our separate ways? It's absolutely something I see friends grappling with.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
It's less taboo to talk about it publicly, maybe. I'm not going to necessarily say it's happening more, but I think that the silence has been broken. And people are now talking about both sides of how a transition can impact a romantic relationship.
Right. And I think that both parties are transitioning. Mm-hmm. It's not just one way. Of course, it could be one way.
Right.
If they decide to separate.
Right.
But it's this side in Paper Bags, the protagonist, I'm not going to give it away.
Right.
Her side, I don't like to use the word side either, but I don't know whether what else to call it. But her point of view, let's call it her point of view.
Yeah.
Hasn't been really spoken about much.
Right.
Because it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard. It's emotional, it's raw, and it takes time to figure it out.
Yeah.
And you have to have a certain kind of an open, curious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so Paper Bags was originally titled Open with Curiosity.
Okay.
But then the publisher said, no, we don't need a tagline. Let's just call it Paper Bags.
Okay.
So that's fine. But curiosity runs throughout the entire book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Well, that's exciting too. And did you return to Vermont? I have heard about from, I think, Dawn.
Yes.
Was a part of it, and Mike Caron went up to Vermont to write. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just sounds like quite the experience. And then obviously I've been talking to people who did the contest and through it found a publishing contract, whether or not they won or not. But did you return to Vermont for writing, or was it just that one trip and then you were off to the races?
Well, I was scheduled to return, but COVID hit and everything stopped. And
yeah.
That's probably my biggest regret, that I did not get to go back and spend time with everyone. I would have loved that.
Yeah.
I would have loved that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe on your second book.
Yeah. Maybe.
Are you planning any in-person events, or is any digital events to celebrate the launch?
I have a digital launch on Zoom, a Zoom launch.
Great.
On Saturday, October 9th.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've decided that I'm just going to have a few really close friends because of the nature of the book.
Right.
And when I look out, I want to see friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to get the barrage of what are you out of your mind?
Mm-hmm.
So it's conservative where I live. It's
sure.
Well, you know, Florida. So
yep.
It's a very conservative place. And I don't know what's really going to happen. I really don't know.
And one last question actually about the book, and then I want to hear more about your favorite thing. Is it set, what are the years that it's set?
It's set in, the late 90s and, early 2000. I mean, there wasn't even, same-sex marriage then.
Right.
I mean, there really, really wasn't. And it is set in the Florida Keys.
Okay.
And Key West.
Great.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Great. So it's a turn of the century story.
Yes. That's right. Wow.
Right?
Exactly.
I keep seeing people talk about Gen X as people born in the late 1900s, and I'm like, it's true. Was born in 1977, which is the late 1900s, but it's weird. Doesn't work on my ear yet.
Well, you should be born in the 40s. There's right. one for you right yeah. there. Holy smokes.
Well, Trish, the book is why we were introduced, but part of the podcast is also learning about people's favorite things. And so I'm curious what you would like to talk about today.
I think probably for me, and you even use the word curious, that you're curious. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious about everything. And so I have a curiosity about the aging process. Mm-hmm. This is kind of interesting. When I was in the contest, there was an agent there, mm-hmm. and I pitched, and the agent said, "Don't you know that everything has an expiration date?" And I thought, son of a gun. Because throughout the whole time I was really, I have pretty good genes and I can, you know, I'm not saying I can look young, but I knew they didn't know. At least I didn't think they knew how old I was. Right. I was afraid I'd get thrown out if they knew, but then right then and there, I said, you know what? That's my brand. There's mm-hmm. There's no expiration date. Yeah. There's no expiration on dreams.
No.
So that's,
was there an expiration on the punch you threw in their face?
In fact, I went ahead then and because you have to present your marketing plan, and I made that my marketing plan. I said, here it is.
Yeah.
That's just exactly what it is, because, you know, I'm still here. I'm not gone. I'm not going anywhere.
Right.
So that was a pretty, not so subtle.
Yeah.
A little bit of a jibe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're here, but you know, what else you got?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the whole longevity, vitality, that whole issue, mm-hmm. I'm very interested in. I'm very curious about. I love all the research that's going on about how long we're going to be able to live, mm-hmm. and then of course that takes you to the state of the world,
right.
And then you're right back to transformation again.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that if you can stay open-minded and curious, that will help you in the long run stay vital,
mm-hmm.
and maybe healthy. You know, if you do enough research and find out what kind of pills the doctors are taking, because they're taking some interesting drugs. Yeah. So, I think probably there's going to be a lot going on in that whole longevity arena.
And I also think, you know, we were talking about real estate earlier. The housing market in Chicago certainly is also being transformed by people's decision to age in place. Mm. That people want to stay in their homes. They're getting construction done to a friend of mine who's in construction was building a model home. And he was like, yeah, so we have this, it could be two closets on top of each other, or it could be an elevator. And I was like, dude, what are you, I was like, who is putting an elevator in their house? What are you talking about? And he was like, and everybody at the table chimed in, that like, it's absolutely in some of the wealthier suburbs of Chicago as people are planning to age in place and looking at their own longevity, that building for accessibility is also part of how people are planning now. But I'm curious, because you like kind of casually mentioned gut health And I'm on your No Expiration blog, and you also have a link to a biology of trauma group. I'm curious, what are some of the things that you've learned maybe in the last couple years that have either changed how you're living or what you're eating or what you're doing in a day? What are some recent changes you've made?
I would say the gut health overwhelming change in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It was 25 with the entire metabolic syndrome, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and pre-diabetes.
Yep.
And I thought, this isn't going to be my life. This is absolutely not. So I got a book by Dr. Jerry Mullen called Gut Balance Revolution.
Okay.
And started on his gut plan. In 5 months, when I went back to see my doctor, she took me off every morning. And it was such a complete turnaround that I could not keep it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I started teaching a class on gut health in my community.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to sound a little bit woo-woo.
I love a woo-woo. I love a woo-woo. Go for it.
One morning, Jerry came out and he said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, since you've been doing this and teaching this class, he said, are you aware that your voice has actually changed?
Hmm.
And I went, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Huh.
But also what changed was, I think that's where my courage came from. I think that's where the courage came. Because there's a lot of research that shows what goes on between the gut and the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so your gut is talking to your brain. And next thing you know, I'm deciding maybe I'm going to write a controversial book.
Yeah.
So I really believe I think that's where it came from, because my whole life, I always said, courage skipped me. It went from my mom to my daughter, and I was in the middle and I never got it.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden it pops up, and I think it's gut health. And I think it's one of the most important things that you can do. I make my own kefir. I make kombucha. I make fermented vegetables, and I don't eat keto, but I do try to, I do try to watch sugar and carbs.
Yeah.
That's, I know how it works. Actually, my career, I was a nutritionist.
Okay.
My whole life. But what happened was, when I started in the 60s, that was when all those kinds of skills were seen as menial.
Mm-hmm.
And you farmed them out. You had people cooking for you. You had people taking care of your children.
Right.
There was not any value seen.
Right.
So then when I had my children in the 70s, and then in the 80s, I was working as a nutritionist in a supermarket.
Okay.
I mean, what a cool job.
Yeah.
That was. And I was evaluating all the products on the shelf, and I was working with a local hospital to help people choose better foods. I'm in a business that had no value for nutrition. This is in the 80s.
Mm.
Now today that's different. They get it. But I'm swimming upstream.
Right.
They don't have any idea what I'm doing.
Right.
what is she doing? So then in the 90s, I was an educational consultant as the whole field of home economics, which is what it was called then, moved into a new area called Family and Consumer Sciences. So I started working with the administrators in the state of Pennsylvania to help them figure out how can we get the teachers to make this change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was the assessor. I'm like, oh, this is really great. Not only do I have to assess change, but I have to come up with data that shows what kind of changes are taking place.
Yeah.
And I was actually able to get a model out of University of Texas at Austin, and they had this phenomenal change-based model, and it worked really well until I went to the State Department of Education and presented my data.
Oh.
And they said, oh, we don't care about any of this stuff. I went, wait a minute, don't you care whether or not they change or be willing to change? Nah, we don't. We just want to know whether they can spell. I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
What a disappointment.
There I am again. There
right.
I am again. I'm out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Out there somewhere. So, but through that, I did get a group, a team. There was a team of us that were able to create some standards and help make some of the changes happen. And then again, you know, I started to feel valued, and then I started to actually make consulting kind of money. And then, you know, in the end, there ain't nothing like money.
Right.
To tell you whether they value you
mm-hmm.
or not, you know? So it's been, I'm in a place that's not unfamiliar, this
mm-hmm.
place where I may or may not find a value. The book may or may not find a value.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay there.
Yeah.
I'm okay there. I've always been there. I've always been out on the edge somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's just how it's going to be.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And I do. It's so interesting that you say that your courage, it was after you fixed your gut health, that
yep.
you found your courage to write this book.
Yep.
Did you find that other, because you also mentioned that you teach in your community as well. Have you seen or heard feedback from other people that you're, you know, that are your neighbors and that are following some of your advice and discoveries? Has anybody whispered to you about changes they've felt?
There's been tons of medical changes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys had AFib,
yep.
which is a serious heart issue. And probably after a couple months of working on the program, it almost totally went away. He doesn't even really have it anymore.
Wow.
And so there were a lot of things. And part of it was, you know, just trying to get people to become proactive when they go in to see their doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why am I doing this? Why am I taking this? What's
right.
that? What's this? That's a huge problem for people. They think that the doctor knows everything. And that's not necessarily the case,
right.
because there's no way with the research and data that we have nowadays that any doctor could ever keep up with what they, something like it'd take them 67 hours a week or something to read all the research, all the latest research.
Right.
So, I mean, forget that.
Yeah. Well, one of the, I have a master's in health communication.
Okay.
Which has made me a nightmare.
Oh yeah, you're
on
fun. you're fun. Yeah, you're a great patient. Yeah, like me.
One of the things that really stuck with me is that it takes 17 years for evidence to become common practice. And it's why we're at about like year 14 or 15 with the guidance that like everybody should get a flu shot.
Right.
Which is why it's like pretty commonly accepted, is that we're getting close to that 17 year mark. And it's part of why I think COVID has been so difficult, is that it's been a long time since we had to live in the hypothesis.
Right.
Right. That like right. Watching the science change around us, we're not scientists. We're not equipped to live in the lab and get so much data all the time. And it takes 17 years for anything to become common practice. And so right. I think that's like an underreported challenge of COVID, is that so all of everything that you've been learning about gut health in the last, you know, 4 to 6 years is still has time before it becomes more commonly accepted and before the doctor that can't set aside 65 hours to read research, a decade away from the primary care physician knowing some of the gut health stuff that you've been learning.
Right. You're right. I did have a good doctor though. She used to ask me to bring it in. She said, "Would you bring me in one of those mothers?"
Oh
yeah. What do you want? The kombucha mother or the kefir mother? The nurse has got a big, yeah, you know, mm-hmm. I'm bringing her all the good stuff. Yeah.
I went to TED Med now probably four or five years ago, which is the health and medicine side of TED Talks.
Oh, okay.
And met someone at one of the networking events who was talking about how essentially the gut is the equivalent of space exploration.
Right.
And we were talking a little bit about, we might've been talking about fecal transplant.
Yep.
Right. When people have.
Sure. Sure.
CFID? No.
C. diff.
C. diff.
Yep.
That if you do a fecal transplant, like you can transplant the gut flora.
Yep.
And clear up a case of that.
It's almost 100%, almost 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And people died. People right. died who had it before.
Right.
Yep.
But that also, he had this idea that, he was like, there might become a future where armies do gut bacteria transplants to make their soldiers behave in a certain way. Because of that gut brain.
Oh yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Connection that yep. you could change people's
Personality.
Change yep. personality, change yep. behavior. So there was like a little bit of a science fiction crossover there, but it really stuck with me. That's like one of the only sure. conversations I remember clearly was that he just felt like there was as much to be explored in the gut brain connection as there was in an outer space.
Right. Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Just fascinating. But when someone says to you, "Do you know that your voice has actually changed?"
Right.
You go, "Wow. How about that?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
And it sounds pretty great to have a partner in life who can see you in that way.
Exactly. Yeah. Really, that's pretty cool. That's awareness right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Are there things about in your community? So you said you teach line dancing, you swim every day. I mean, line dancing has got to help with coordination.
It looks like the data is really good for staving off dementia if you're dancing, because you've got to come up, you've got to remember the steps, and you've got the combination of the steps and your brain and the movement.
Okay.
So I've seen some pretty interesting data on that. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so much fun. I mean, way fun. A lot of fun.
Where do you get your, where do you get your new line dances from?
I belong to a line dance group that is on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also will go on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
because YouTube is great.
Yeah.
And that way I can, I can do that. But it's extremely challenging to teach.
Right.
Because you have to, know ahead of time which foot you're going to start on. Mm-hmm. What's the step? You have to cue the downbeat on the music. It's a lot. In fact, I have a little trouble sometimes cueing the downbeat. It must be a different part of my brain, and they like challenge one another.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to have somebody in here who, you're just going to have to hit the downbeat for me. And there's no other two ways.
Right.
It sounds silly, but it is. I mean, you're standing in front of, 20, 30 people, and they're just all watching you. Want to see what are we doing here?
Right. So it's safe until you have to turn the music on.
Yeah, I can sometimes get it, but it, for some reason, it must be, I don't know what part of the brain. It's a different part of the brain than the, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's challenging.
It absolutely is. And you're looking at people who are not your mirror reflection.
Oh, right. They're behind me. Right.
So that is also difficult.
Right.
Yeah. I did marching band in high school, which has helped, I think, with, train that part of my brain. And I also had my fifth grade teacher, Ms. Lindsay, offered an alternative recess where we could stay inside with her and learn to dance.
Great.
And we learned how to do the stroll.
Yep.
While listening to Werewolves in London.
Oh, that's really cool. So really cool.
Anytime Werewolves of London comes in, I'm like, okay, everybody.
Let's go.
We're doing the stroll. And, right. Like only my sister was in that class with me. So it doesn't make sense to a lot of people why my immediate reaction to that song is to start doing a grapevine. But it's really a great, it's an outstanding song if you ever want to do the stroll with your class.
Okay. All right. I love that. I love that.
And then obviously, like, I've got the electric slide.
Right.
And I guess I feel like, I mean, the grapevine is the basis of all of it. And then maybe there was a moment in time where I could do the boot, scoot, and boogie. But that
that's a little more complicated.
It is,
Yeah, because you've got to turn around and kind of kick your foot up. But
yeah,
I'm hoping, I haven't started this year yet. I'm hoping it comes back to me. Because I know when I say to the group, they're going to go, oh, we don't have any idea.
Right.
It's going to be like, last year that didn't, the year before, no, that never happened. Oh, well, it's fun.
That is fun. So do you have like a community center?
Yes. Yes. Nice. Yeah. We have a clubhouse. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. It's nice. Yeah. It's nice.
Do you ever do like potlucks or community meals in the clubhouse?
They have had potlucks, but here's my experience with potluck. I take ham and scalloped potatoes enough to feed 20.
Uh-huh.
And I get there and somebody has a, a 6-inch bowl of potato chips or something. And I go, whoa, wait a minute. This is, so no, that doesn't work out very well.
Yeah.
Not for me anyway.
Yeah. My group of friends that I do Shabbat dinners with, we,
right.
The risk was that you become like a cookie and hummus potluck group. right? That people sure. like stop at the right. store on their way to your house and they get something that's pre-made and you just end up with like hummus, cookies, and that's it. And so we right. were very clear, like, you know, you have to bring a real dish. The dish needs to feed X number of people. If you're a couple, you're bringing a dish and a drink. If you are a solo person, you can bring a dish or a drink. And
that's a good idea.
Right. Because we had right. all been in, it was, my friend group got, is like all people that get like CSAs and they're like competitive vegetarian cooks.
Right.
So we would have, you know, some nights we'd be like, okay, guys, 3 quinoa dishes is enough. But they would all be like different. It wasn't
right.
3 quinoa and pine nuts. It was 3 like very different quinoa dishes.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, we got tired of, I said, oh, we got to, you know, we get stuck on quinoa. We really need to just mix it up a little bit mm-hmm. here. This gets a little crazy.
Yeah. Do you, cause you mentioned pickling. Do you make your own kimchi?
You know, I've never tried to make kimchi. Mm-hmm. I've tried it, but I didn't care for the taste of it. And so I've never tried to make it.
Okay.
I probably should though, to give it a try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never made it. I've done like easy pickles
mm-hmm.
with just like some vinegar and sugar and, you know, mm-hmm. I've done very right. simple fridge pickles.
Right, right.
I haven't gone much beyond that.
Yeah.
And kombucha, what do I need to know about kombucha to like find one to try that will change my opinion on it? Like what do you think are, because you did say you have a kombucha mother, so you are making your own kombucha.
I do. And I don't usually let it get like to the vinegary stage.
Mm-hmm.
I like it to be, you know, still have a little bit of sweetness.
Yeah.
And then I like to add, all different, like maybe some cherry juice or blueberry juice or pomegranate or pomegranate juice.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put together all kinds of things. I might get some fresh ginger and maybe some pear,
yeah.
you know, pieces of pear. So I experiment with all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But you have to try different brands, and some of the brands you can actually start your own mother with some of the brands, but it takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't tend to be patient enough. I just buy the mother.
Okay.
I just buy it on Amazon. Yeah. It comes in a little, you know, it's a little, yeah. you look at it and you go, oh, really? Really? This is
I paid for this.
That's right. And then when it's sitting on your counter, you almost think, gee, I hope nobody comes in to see
right.
this.
Yeah, I do want to give kombucha another shot. I feel like I bought it once or twice, not really knowing. I just wasn't prepared for what was going to happen, like what it was going to taste like.
Right.
Or maybe I thought I bought iced tea and it was kombucha, which is just if you're mentally prepared for iced tea.
Exactly.
It's not there. So I do want to try it again because I think I was just didn't have all the information. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, gross. But I feel like I've grown up a little. I can try it again.
I'd love to tell you a certain brand, but I don't buy it.
Yeah.
I only make it.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then when you make it, you can make it to whatever taste you want to make it.
Right.
I mean, and you pick whatever kind of tea you want.
Yeah.
It's a little shocking when you put the sugar in, you go, oh, I don't know about this,
mm-hmm.
but it, the mother takes care of all the sugar. And so the amount of sugar you get is very, very, very small.
Right.
So, yeah, try to give it another. Give it another
Try it again. I'll try it again.
Okay.
So I have, I made a note of the, now I closed the tab. So my, I added it to my Amazon list, the new gut balance. Was that it?
The book?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, it's from 2015. So mm-hmm. this one's not new, but I really like this one because he's got, his recipes are just okay. I have all my own recipes,
okay.
But if you get into it, you know, let me know. I can send you all kinds of things.
Okay.
I can send you all kinds of recipes and ideas and everything.
Yeah.
Cause I taught it for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just looking at, this is not a way to judge a book, but I'm going to judge a book by its cover. But there's like cashews, strawberries, kiwi, pickles, yogurt, a bok choy, a broccoli. Like these are all foods I like on the cover of the book.
Right.
And
right.
If you're going to tell me there's something out there where I get to eat more pickles.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
That's right. That's right.
I'll eat more pickles.
And you want to get the refrigerated ones, Leah. They have the live bacteria.
Okay. So not the ones, not just the ones like next to the ketchup.
No.
Okay.
No. Those would be that would be all processed out. The heat will kill it. Yeah.
Ah.
All right.
Is there anything else about that I didn't actually ask you that you wanted to make sure to mention this today?
I get asked a lot. You know where the title came from.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems to have been the container. And it was for me, the container that held, you know, all the shame based
mm-hmm.
stuff. And on the cover, there is a paper bag, but it's torn
mm-hmm.
and the secrets are tumbling out. So everybody has pretty much a paper bag, or they could find one. And, you know, you can either open it or you can keep it closed up, but mm-hmm. I'm for opening it.
Outstanding.
So that's how I came up. Yeah. They fought me a little bit. They didn't, you know, they weren't too crazy about it, but I kind of held my own.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, a paper bag, especially one with a tear, is kind of a curious little number right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this one has what looks to be maybe some lingerie coming mm-hmm, out.
Peeking out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So hopefully it'll be enough to get people to buy it. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
So paper bags available now. It was published on October 5th. Available online, paperback, and digital. Trish, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm trishmcdonald.com. That's my website. And there's a blog. You can contact me. Right now, you can contact me directly. I don't have a middle person. Mm-hmm. If it takes off, I may have to have a middle person.
Yep.
But right now, you can contact me. You can email me. Just click the button that says contact Trish. You have questions or you just want to chat. No problem.
Great.
Yeah.
And you are on Twitter now.
I'm on Twitter. My Twitter is Trish McWriter, McWriter.
Great.
And on Instagram, I'm Trish Mc305.
All right. Is that your area code?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. That's the area code. Yeah.
Well, Trish, best of luck.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to getting my hands on this book, and I am going to have a lot of time to read coming up. So I'm grateful for this fall to talk, you know, like I'm talking to authors every week right now, and it's really been a delight, and I really am enjoying it.
Good. Okay. I'll keep you in my thoughts.
Thank you, Trish.
You're welcome. It's great talking to you.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.